Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Lori Horada, Executive Director for Anaphylaxis Canada. So tell me a little bit about Anaphylaxis Canada.
We are a Canadian nonprofit organization that is dedicated to helping people live with allergies that can be life-threatening. So the most common ones that you might be aware of are food, but it could also be things like insect stings, drugs, latex, and so forth.
And how do you go about spreading the word about this work?
Well, we have a website that can be accessed by the public. We do a lot of media interviews. We do a lot of training with people who educate in the school system. And we have different programs that run for families and also youth as well. And we do conferences in different communities.
So these programs you mentioned, can you give me kind of an overview?
Of our programs?
Yes.
Sure. So we have programs that are where we provide more formal training. For example, we teach nurses and pharmacists and other healthcare workers and health and safety people to deliver training in their own communities so they can teach teachers or daycare workers, for example, how to recognize the signs and symptoms of anaphylaxis and what to do in an emergency. We also do food service training for the industry. We have a corporate partners program where we work with different companies, predominantly in the food industry and the pharmaceuticals, to ensure that you know their messaging, the information they're providing for people at risk is informative and is in line with basic safety messages that we want to get out there. And they've been very good about helping to support us, such as our information sessions and our conferences. We also have a really unique program for youth. I'm not sure if you're aware, Cam, but youth are often the higher risk group when you look at people who have something like food allergies, for example, because they tend to take more risks in general. So what we found is that youth creating resources for their own demographic works the best. They can speak to each other, they can teach each other, and they can engage. And that's the best way we're finding of them getting up to speed on how to best stay safe and not to be shy about telling others about their allergies. We also have a program for parents of children newly diagnosed with food allergies. We have a unique site right off our website called Support Center, allergysupportcenter.ca. So the idea is if people can get the best information from the get-go when their child's diagnosed, they're going to manage a lot better.
So, when you mentioned safety messages that you wanted to spread the word about, give me an example there.
Well, there are basic things that you have to do if you've been diagnosed with an allergy that can be life-threatening. For example, from a very young age, you have to learn how to avoid what you're allergic to, if it's a food, for example. And that means learning how to read a food label so you know what's in a food product, or asking restaurant staff when you're dining out about your allergies and what meals might be safe for them. One of the most important things is if you've been diagnosed as being at risk for anaphylaxis, in many cases, doctors are prescribing an auto-injector that contains life-saving medication. In Canada, we have two devices. One is called an EpiPen, and the other is called the Allerject. And these are meant to be kept with you at all times, just in case of an emergency. And we encourage people to use them early if they feel like they're having an allergic reaction, because it will help to manage that reaction and stop it.
So, do you see a lot of community support for these efforts to raise awareness?
Sorry, I couldn't hear that, Cam.
So, do you see a lot of community support for your efforts to raise awareness?
Absolutely. We get a lot of calls from media that know that, you know, we represent the voice of many people with food allergies and other allergies. So, we're very happy that they come to us to help spread the word. In the school system, Canada, you know, very proudly, we've got one of the best levels of awareness, I think, internationally, where we have measures in place to protect kids at risk. There is more training. Certainly, there are gaps and there can be improvements, but we've come a long way in the last decade. If you go into many restaurants these days, many of them are more allergy aware and will try and accommodate you if you have a food allergy. And I think in general, the awareness has improved over the years.
So, in your time with Anaphylaxis Canada, what sorts of challenges have you seen?
I think one of the biggest challenges is when people don't have the right information, the anxiety level is very high. And that's why it's so important that people get the best information from their healthcare professional. Ultimately, or if they can, see an allergist to get a proper diagnosis. There are a lot of people who think they have food allergy who don't, and you don't want these people avoiding things unnecessarily. The other side of that, though, is that there are people who have a true food allergy that are probably not well protected, and they're at greater risk for a reaction. So it's really important to have good information from the get-go and to follow your doctor's advice.
So, to look at the converse side of things, in your time with the organization, is there any one success moment that stood out for you?
Oh, we've had many. I think the two that come to mind right now, top of mind, are Sabrina's Law. And in Ontario, the government passed a law in 2005 which mandates that all school boards have measures in place to protect kids at risk of anaphylaxis. And the law was named Sabrina's Law after a 13-year-old Ontario girl who died in 2003 after having an allergic reaction at school. So this law came into effect in 2006 in Ontario in the public school sector, and what we've seen is this ripple effect where the private schools, camps, you know, they've adopted very similar policies. It's had a ripple effect right across the country, in fact. So we have seen improvements over the years in all the provinces. The second real big success story was the updating of the food regulations by Health Canada in 2012 that came into effect. And we had been advocating for years, more than a decade actually, for the government to improve labeling and getting manufacturers to label in a way that makes it clearer for people to understand. Because a lot of the times, things were written in scientific names. For example, egg might have been listed as albumin. And if you have an allergy to egg, you've got to avoid it. But most people are not food scientists. So what we've asked for and what came into effect is food manufacturers now are required to label common allergens in simple language. You know, a 7-year-old should be able to read a food label and understand if there's egg in it and avoid it.
So, are there any projects on the horizon for Anaphylaxis Canada?
Yep. We will be launching later this year a free online learning course that'll be three different modules. One will be for schools, second for daycares, and the third will be for public. You asked about challenges previously, Cam. One of the greatest challenges is lack of funding. And there aren't a lot of standards for what constitutes, you know, anaphylaxis training. And what we've done is we've worked with two groups, the Canadian Society of Allergy and Clinical Immunology, so that's the Peak Body Group, and also Leap Learning Technology, to develop a course that is based on evidence, very practical. The best thing, though, is it's going to be a course that's made available to the public for free, and it will be bilingual as well. So it's great It's going to be a very good resource for schools and for daycares and the community in general. Something people can also let their friends and family know about, too, to help get them informed.
So, if you could send any one message about the work of Anaphylaxis Canada, what might you say?
I think we are the voice of reason. We have a lot of great information. The things that we put out are medically reviewed, and that's really, really important. There's a lot of information that's accessible for free with a click of a button if you're on the internet, but not all of it is good and not all of it's evidence-based. And it's really important to have that so that you can manage safely and be careful and not fearful of your allergies.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
For organizations such as this, folks, it can be tough to get the word out about what information is correct and what you might want to veer away from. So much as most people assume that allergies are just allergies, common sense stuff. But for those who are experiencing a potentially life-threatening condition on account of this, it's important to always be prepared. Truth of the matter is, education is always the key in any facet of disability life. It's a matter of raising awareness, clearing up the myths surrounding any given condition. It can be difficult, because people are inclined these days, at least to some degree, to get a quick answer, and in many cases, that can mean just reading something off the internet. But I would advise anyone out there who has questions about a given condition, contact someone who knows. Look into it. There are always people out there who understand and are willing to help. It may take some time, it may take some effort to find the right information, but this can lead to so many potential benefits. Not always necessarily a cure right away, but disability life many times, it's about steps, it's about making progress, finding the right information, finding the right support, and improving the quality of life. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Flautist Jeff Kern steps forward with his new R&B soul hip-hop album, Soulfisticated. Packing a lot of intensity, his flute sings, floats, and pushes melodies forward with muscle and charm. And it sounds like special guests include Divine Brown and Slacka the Beach Child.
Check out Jeff Kearns on iTunes and Soulfisticated.com.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Lori Harada from Anaphylaxis Canada. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Joe Ferrara, board member for the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. He'll be telling us about his expectations for this year's soccer tournament. This is a post-dated interview, folks, and the tournament itself may have passed by the time this airs. So tell me a little bit about your hopes for this year's ICHA tournament.
Well, basically, the reason that we're having the tournament, it's in its 27th year, and to provide for the mentally challenged individual an opportunity to come and play indoor soccer at our facility, as we have done at least in the last 10 years at our facility, and prior to that at local high schools and so on. So we welcome some of the athletes and teams that have been to our tournament in the past, and it also gives the opportunity of not only our members, the ICHA members, but also other people to renew their friendship.
So, for those who aren't as familiar with the work of the ICHA, give me kind of an overview.
Well, the ICHA was founded in prior to 1987. In 1987, we received our charity certification, and we provide sports and social activities for mentally challenged individuals. To give an example, the sports that we sponsor and hold at our facility, bocce, soccer, floor hockey. We have basketball at another site, also we sponsor bowling. And we hold social events, Christmas party, Valentine, and Halloween parties through the year. So not only do we give them an opportunity to play whatever sport they're interested in, but also to socialize not only with their members, but also with people in the community.
So, do you see a lot of community support for this work?
We do. We receive a lot of support, and when we go out to request for donations and sponsorship for this tournament, it's incredible the number of individuals and companies in the Windsor Essex area that are there returning their letters with a check and money to help us hold this event year after year. And I thank not only the individuals, but also the companies that are sponsoring this event. Without them, it would not happen. So we get a lot of support from our community.
So is there anything expected different about this year's tournament as opposed to previous years?
This year, it's, for example, to give an example of the number of teams responding and attending, we have 13 teams that will be participating. And compared to other years, if we go back, let's say, in the good days when we had 24 teams, now with the expense of travel, it makes it very difficult for teams that are a great distance from Windsor to travel down to Windsor. So those teams like Ottawa, Montreal, don't come anymore because of the cost of travel. And the local communities should understand this. If they want their special teams to attend events, they've got to be there to support them in order to get them to attend these tournaments. In our case, that's not what we expect. We don't expect the high turnout anymore, but at least we're focusing on more local participation, and we're fine with that. But, things don't stay the same, and it's something that we accept and move on and focus on providing for our special members that live in our community.
So, must present something of a logistical challenge to get the teams that are in attendance just set up for the games.
Well, to give you an idea, as far as what we do as the host area or team holding an event like this, we take care of the fundraising, and this is something that continues year-round. I depend on my volunteers that I know are going to attend and come here. For the teams, for example, from the Toronto area, which is, I believe we have South Simcoe and we have Brampton. They are teams that have come here before, and it's not extremely difficult for them to travel 3 hours to get to here. They stay at a local hotel, and this way they're able to compete the following day, which is March the 8th, the date of the tournament. It's an all-day tournament from games in the B, C, and D team levels are take place, and the games finish at 4 o'clock. After the 4 o'clock last game, we have an awards banquet at 5 o'clock, and we have dancing. Some of the teams that come from the Toronto area basically will stay overnight and travel back to Toronto the following day on Sunday. So for them, it's a 1, 2, or 3-day event with the local teams, Windsor, the Windsor Kubota, or anyone within a driving range of an hour, like, for example, London. They could return to London that same night, and there's no issue. So those are some of the logistics that both the host team and the faraway teams have to take care of.
So in your time with the ICHA and soccer tournaments, what's been the greatest success moment that you've witnessed?
I think the greatest success that I look at is the individual, the athlete, the members, not only the ICHA members, but also the teams that come from out of town, their members that experience the joy of playing, and you can see that in their faces. And for anybody in our community that is able to come to the Novelletto Rosati Complex this Saturday, March the 8th, please come and you can see for yourself as to not only what Windsor is doing, but also other communities, Brampton, London, Kitchener, that what they do, the volunteers that volunteer their time to help these special people. And it's a great joy. That is the greatest joy, more than anything.
So if you could send any one message about disability sports and the tournament in general, what might you say?
If you're a sponsor, please, when you get a request, whether it's from the ICHA or any other individual representing Special Olympics Ontario, please be there to support. If you're an individual that maybe has a special child that needs that opportunity to be involved, come out and have a look, whether it's your community, our community. Come on and have a look and see, give the opportunity for that special individual to experience life and joy.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thank you.
Of course. Joe made an excellent point during his interview in that when someone's called on to be there in disability life, they should be. It's a matter of providing equality and an opportunity for an individual with a disability. It's a matter of saying, I recognize that your life has potential and meaning, and I want to be someone who helps get you there, someone who helps you find the stepping stones that can help you reach your full potential. Disability sports can be a very freeing experience. It can be an opportunity for someone with a disability to be a part of a team, to get out there and just do what they love, not necessarily thinking about the things that might hold them back. It's an opportunity for them simply to express their true capabilities. And the ICHA spent years providing these opportunities. Started at a very personal level for one individual who just wanted a family member to have a better chance. But since then, it's grown, provided new and unique opportunities for these individuals. just to live in a way they get to express themselves through the sport that they love. And when a person with a disability, or anyone in society, is doing the thing they love to do, leads to greater happiness, and a more balanced life. The recognition that, yeah, there are some trials in life. There are some difficulties. But these can be balanced with good times, friends, family, doing the things you love to do. For it's true, each person with a disability has hopes, dreams, and potentials all their own. It tends to be large-scale disability events that get the most public notice. However, I maintain that there should be more time taken to recognize the day-to-day happenings in disability life. Things like traditional sports page. Look at that. Tell me there's an equal amount of disabilities coverage. Disability sporting events are held almost every day of the week if you look hard enough. There can be amount of coverage there too. I'm not saying that it would be a matter of covering every single event. You don't have the manpower, time, or any of that. It's the same deal with almost any news story. More of an effort could be made to support disability sports and the groups that are working so hard to stand beside them. So then the question becomes, why don't more people get involved? Take the time to get to know what disability sport, ultimately disability life, is all about. In many cases, there can be this perception that says, oh, it doesn't impact me personally. Disability has struck in every family somewhere, sometime. It's just a question of whether or not a person knows about it. But to look at the converse side of things, events like this that do draw in such large-scale attention do at least pave the way for the possibility of greater recognition. And for the athletes themselves, does provide an opportunity for them, maybe for the very first time, to meet somebody like themselves. Not necessarily somebody with their exact condition, but someone with a disability who is a sports enthusiast, who loves the game, wants to be part of something bigger than themselves, part of a team situation. And that can have a very long-standing impact on a person with a disability. The realization they're not alone, that there are those out there who are facing the same things. And maybe they can even learn from each other, play off each other's ideas, find what works and what doesn't. But having that sense of community is critical in any person's life. Person sees a challenge as being something they're facing entirely on their own. It can seem like an impossible uphill battle. However, strength in numbers really is something that disability life is built on. The more people know about a condition, the more people work together to find solutions, to find opportunities, the better things will ultimately turn out. Events like this bring together many, many different groups. And that's an amazing thing, because it's a chance to reflect upon what's happening in different regions and to share the ideas of equality and work towards the future. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. You have earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.